Welcome to Mastering Your 30s, a podcast to guide women in their 30s about how to relax, enjoy the ride, and make investments for their future health, wealth, and well-being, and for women beyond their 30s to share their wisdom and experience with others. I am Alev Bakan, health and nutrition coach and founder of Health & Co. Today, my guest is Courtney Boyer. She is a relationship and sexuality expert and author of Not Tonight, Honey, Why Women Actually Don't Want Sex and What We Can Do About It. She has been featured in publications including Parents, The Huffington Post, Cosmopolitan, The Independent, Yahoo, and The Mirror. And Courtney believes we can reclaim our power through our sexuality, and she helps her client to infuse passion and creativity into their lives by helping them uncover what's preventing them from connecting with their pleasure and purpose. Like I also mentioned during our talk several times, it was an eye-opening conversation for me. We talked about the correlation of love and sex, when and how to seek for a sex and relationship coach help, and if we can do it alone if our partner is not up to it, the cause of tension in relationship, both physical and mental, and of course, I ask her my three signature questions. Like I said before, it is an eye-opening, honest, and fun conversation. As usual, your questions or comments are more than welcome. You can reach me via Instagram at Health & Co. USA or email your questions to questions@healthandco.com. Hi, Courtney. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you here too. Can you tell us about yourself a little bit?
Sure. So I am a relationship and sexuality expert. I am trained, I'm a trained mental health and sex therapist who turned to coaching a few years ago. And I work with individuals and couples and help them to solve their relationship and sex problems.
Wow. Hot topic. A very important topic, but also somehow a little bit like off the record topic, like people, they feel this problem, but I think they don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, how do people come out and reach out to you? Do they come to you saying that we have a relationship and sex problem, or like you dig down and then you found out that there are some problems in those areas?
Yeah. So usually people come to me in one of two cases. If it's a couple, they come to me like pretty much right before they go to the divorce lawyer. So I'm like the last stop. Like it's real bad. And like divorces being thrown out, they don't communicate. They're not sexually intimate anymore. And so it's pretty bad usually with couples. And then the other people that I work with are typically, you know, men, women, whoever, who are just feeling like, okay, I did all the right things. I checked all of the boxes and there's something that feels off in my life. Like I'm either in, like my relationships aren't fulfilling, my job's not fulfilling. I don't have like that mojo, that excitement, that passion anymore. And I just feel like I'm going through the motions. Sometimes they will come because their husband, a lot of times, will say, you know, hey, I'm concerned. You don't really seem interested in sex anymore. You don't seem interested in life really much anymore. And so you need to go talk to somebody.
I see. And I think you also have a book, right?
I do. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you please tell us about your book a little bit?
Sure. So it's called Not Tonight, Honey, Why Women Actually Don't Want Sex and What We Can Do About It. And I wrote that because anytime I would talk to groups of women, I would always have someone come up to me and ask, what is wrong with me, or am I broken? And those two questions are really what led me to write a book, because I wanted women to know that, one, they're not alone, and two, there is nothing wrong with them, and that they are not broken, and help them to understand why they're not really interested in sex and what they can do about that.
I see. Well, so like let me ask you this. Is sex related to love? So do you want to have like sex with a person you love? So if there is no sex in a marriage, does it mean that there is no love anymore? Or
yeah.
Like, I think as a general concept, we think that if that person doesn't want to have a physical relationship with mm-hmm. us, that means they don't love us. But yeah. Is it true?
No. The short answer is no. Mm-hmm. I think that sex is one way that we can express love. I think you mm-hmm. can have sex without love, and you can have love without sex.
Uh-huh.
I think it depends on the purpose of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things when I work with couples, even individuals, but I really want to come back to, why are you married, or why are you together? What's the purpose of this relationship? And really help them to create an intentional outlook on their life, as opposed to just going, well, we fell in love, or we shared the same values. I thought he'd be a good dad, or she'd be a good wife. And so like we just kind of ended up together, and here we are 20 years later.
Yeah.
And so I think that when you help people to understand why they're in the place that they're at, and really look at that and the role that sex plays in that or doesn't play in that, I think mm-hmm. A lot of people, and even some practitioners, marriage and family therapists, will say, you know, like sex, it is an integral part of, you know, a quote, a healthy relationship. And I mm-hmm. think that, you know, modern day relationships are evolving so much that it may or may not be, but it's as long as the people are on the same page and they're in agreement, and that their needs are getting met and they have the same purpose for being coupled, then I don't think that anybody really has the right to say that, you know, a sexless marriage is unhealthy, or, you know, sex without love is bad.
I see. So since we are focusing women in their 30s.
Yes.
What do you see as a coach and therapist, like the main issue women in their 30s have about their relationship and also maybe their like sexual life, like sex?
Yeah, I think that the 30s is a really fun time, because it is when women start to move from the insecurity of their 20s mm-hmm. to really figuring out who they are in their 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the image that comes to my mind is kind of like the 20s is like a shakeup, and then the 30s is kind of like the settling period.
Settling, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the 40s is more of like you get in the groove. Mm-hmm. So in the 30s, it really feels like, okay, like things are starting to kind of like settle down, and I'm figuring out my path. My confidence is increasing a little bit. I'm starting to ask more for what I want, because I know what I want.
What I want. Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I think that women in their 30s are really starting to discover and start to gain the confidence. Not as much as I see women in their 40s have, but mm-hmm. definitely women in their 30s are like, okay, like I can start to like, you know, put my bids out there a little bit more, and really kind of ask for what I want. I think, you know, I see women in their 30s who a lot of them have started families. And so they are in the kind of coming out of the early toddler years. So their mm-hmm. kids are a little bit not so physically reliant on them. You know, they're not necessarily breastfeeding anymore. They're not having to like physically, you know, like make sure that no one's going to burn the house down.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting to gain some more independence and really reconnect with their bodies, or have the opportunity to reconnect with their bodies.
Nice. But there are also like some women in their 30s who are starting like their families and
yeah.
who are like thinking about kids, right?
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Sometimes I had like some of my clients in that situation. They are, of course, thinking to have babies, and, you know, maybe also like society and like people around them are pushing them to have babies, you know, time is ticking, and so like hurry up kind of thing. Then that relationship, and I think maybe the sex life too, mm-hmm. comes to a rough rough time, like, because like suddenly that part becomes like a mandatory action that you have to, you know, maybe calculate and, you know, check your app now, like to see if it's the right time, right thing. And it's like a homework kind of situation, right?
Yes. Yeah. I would say that it's almost like they've switched from the methodical approach to school and finding a career and getting established. They're applying that same methodology to creating a family.
Yeah. And how they can maybe like solve this tension, because I think it has a lot of tension for women, because if they can have a child, first of all, like as a general idea, people think that it's the woman's job to give birth, like to have a child. So it's like the burden is on the woman mostly, like as a general thinking as a concept. I don't think personally like that, but you know, like I would also, if I put myself in their situation, I would start blaming myself first, which nobody should do though. That how they can resolve this tension, because I know that most of the time, like sometimes, let's say, that tension also creates more tension, which leads to maybe not getting pregnant.
Yeah.
Because once they get rid of that tension, everything works out better for everybody.
You're right.
Mm-hmm. How they can ease up that tension, I don't know.
Yeah, I think one of the things that is important that I like to remind my clients is that the tension is there as a means of protection. And so our brain uses the tension as a way to protect us from something. And so if we're able to understand like what the role of that tension is, or why that protector is there in the first place, then, and we're able to work through that and heal that and like basically help that protector to just like take a break, be like, hey, you can go into retirement. You don't have to be tense anymore. But that requires some introspection and some inner work of, you know, a lot of this comes from, like you were saying, these societal expectations, like time's ticking, like, okay, like we need to be pumping out kids now. And this is what you're supposed to do, right? You're supposed to fall in love and get married and have the kids and have, you know, this path. And a lot of people have just accepted that because, well, it's a lot easier to accept it than to really sit down and critically think, is this really what I want?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that sometimes we have that tension come up because it's not what we really want, but we're too scared to admit that. And so we create these blocks in our lives, sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes where we self-sabotage at the most subconscious level because it just doesn't feel safe to have this life that's expected of us.
Yeah. And so how do people reach out to you? Like through, do you have your Instagram and like group coaching? But I think you don't have group coaching, right? It's mostly.
I am going to be launching something later this fall. I'm going to be doing a group coaching later this fall, which I haven't officially announced yet. So your audience is the first to know. Yay. But yeah, I do one-on-one coaching. I'm on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, all the places, my website, and that's all at Courtney Boyer Coaching. So you can find me, Courtney with a C.
So if I'm reaching out to you, like we do, I think online sessions, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you're in Germany, I'd be happy to meet with you. otherwise, yeah, we just do. I have done phone sessions with people as opposed to Zoom because some people, the video is a little bit too overwhelming for them. Mm-hmm. And so they prefer to just do, you know, the phone with no video. I'm up for whatever comfort level. But yeah, traditionally, I'd say 95% of my sessions are via Zoom.
I see. And let's say, you know, like a couple, like as a woman, I feel that there is a tension going on in my relationship with my husband. There are some issues that I want to solve, maybe for myself or in our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to do this together, but my partner, husband, whoever, my boyfriend is not cooperative, doesn't want to join. Do you still think that even in that issue, if I come and reach out to you and get help from you personally, will it still help for my relationship? Or just like, I know it's a tough yeah. question, but like, I know there are some people out there who want to work on their relationship, yeah. but one part, either like the husband or wife, the partner, one yeah. part yeah. is not willing to take yeah. that extra step, or think that everything about himself or herself is perfect and that mm-hmm. the other person need to
is the problem. Yeah.
Is the problem. In those yeah. case, like, to be honest, I don't want to be the generalizing person here, but in those cases, I think whoever thinks is the perfect one has the
problem.
Right. The root of the problem. But like, this is my opinion, 100%. So, it's not yeah. like a survey, like a study or something, but I yeah. personally believe so.
I think, one, it's really common. I have typically worked with one spouse who it's basically like, well, my wife said that I'm the problem. So like, I'm here. I'm like, okay, well, here we go. Uh-huh. I think that it can be dangerous. And I use that word cautiously, but also I think it's also accurate. It can be dangerous when you have one person seeking healing, because when you have a relationship and it is dysfunctional to the point where somebody is reaching out for help or for guidance or whatever from a place of crisis, right? It's mm-hmm. different if they're not in crisis and it's healthy and they're just taking their car in basically for like a tune-up. That is different than from needing your engine completely rehauled.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
That's usually what, in my case, I know there's other practitioners I work with who don't get the crisis situations. I just seem to attract them. People are like, my life is in shambles, Courtney, help me. So usually when I have one person where things are so bad and the other person's like, you go work on it, you fix you, that there's a power dynamic differential and there's also, which is problematic, but then there is also, you know, this one person who's committed to the healing process, and usually that other person is so closed off because they don't think that there's, quote, anything wrong with them. Uh-huh. And so once you just fix yourself, then everything is better. And the problem with that approach is that once that person starts to develop the like healthy boundaries, coping skills, and they start to de-armor themselves and really heal the things that allowed the dysfunction to happen. Mm. When they come back to that partner, they're behaving in ways that are much more healthy and much more boundaried. And mm-hmm. that doesn't feel good to that partner who you was usually in control and who was usually benefiting from the unhealthy things that the partner was doing.
I see. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because one person is like somehow like going to another point now, and that yes. other person is staying right where we left.
Exactly. They're not growing together.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's one of the disclaimers I give when I work with individuals one-on-one, as I say, hey, I just want to let you know, like, you may self-sabotage because you'll start to see that you're growing and your partner isn't like meeting you and they're staying stuck. And that can feel scary, because then the relationship feels really uneven. And it feels like almost like I'm looking through the world with different glasses now. Mm. And now that I'm seeing my partner with these new glasses, they're not as appealing anymore. Mm. They're not meeting those needs. And and so I'm like, hey, that is a lot of people will stop the healing process so that they can remain stuck in that relationship, because a known heaven or a known hell is a lot safer feeling than an unknown heaven.
Because it's a comfort zone, right? Like,
absolutely.
It's very uncomfortable comfort zone. It's absolutely. Not convenient comfort yeah. zone. Yeah.
It is known. And so, you know, that's why I'm like, hey, you may start to, you know, regress because you are getting to the point that your partner doesn't like this new enlightened or new grown version of you. And that can feel really unsafe to be like, oh, I'm going to leave this old life behind. You know, I've heard the phrase, your new life will cost you your old one. Mm-hmm. And at first I was like, well, that's kind of ridiculous. But then I was like, no, it's true. Like, that is absolutely true. This new, shiny, exciting, whatever joy, happiness, pleasure thing that you're looking for, you have to let go of something major in order to pick up that. Like, I think of it like you're holding groceries. Like, mm-hmm. I can't pick up this bag that I really want when my hands are full with this current bag.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really hard when you have spent years, decades with somebody or this family unit, and now you feel like, oh gosh, I have to let that go. Like, I don't know if I can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I also have a question. I don't know if you are comfortable to answer that, but like also as women in their 30s, we are like, if we are raising a family, mm-hmm. we are also somehow coding our kids about relationship and sexuality.
Absolutely.
Too.
Yep. Yes.
And I think the way we are coding them will cost them or will earn them like some things in their when they are in their 30s mm-hmm. and 20s and beyond. So is there anything that you would recommend? Also, you are also a mom, and so like, what should we be careful with, especially with now social media, you know?
Yeah.
Like sexuality is so out there, like, you know, yeah. everything is like sexy, like steamy, like, you know, like so like, what should we do? Like, it's a hard topic also to talk with the kids, or to when they see something, they ask something, you know, everybody has their own
yeah.
way of approaching it. But like, as in like, how can we guide them so that we don't traumatize them and we yeah. don't, we won't be blamed in the future?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. The answer a lot of people don't like to hear, because they want like a really easy like soundbite. They want to be like, oh, I just have to do this one little thing or this one thing and then it'll be fine. But honestly, the best advice I could give, I do give parents because I coach on how to talk to your kids about sexuality, is...
We need to do another recording about
it. Okay.
Some personal questions.
Happy to come back. The best thing that you can do is work through your own stuff. Mm-hmm. Because as a parent, it is so easy to pass down our baggage to our kids.
Yeah.
Like, I think about, like, I grew up in a family that was really critical of female body, or bodies of all types, but especially female bodies. My sister and I, our weight was always criticized. Our looks was always criticized. Like, oh, you're wearing that? Like, oh, that kind of, like, that makes you look fat. Like, oh, do you think that, you know, I mean, like, oh, did you put on weight? Like, so that was something that I had to work through before I had, especially my two oldest are daughters. I never wanted them to ever not feel safe in their bodies, comfortable in their bodies. I never wanted them to feel like I was criticizing their body. And so that was something that I had to work through before I could be a supportive mom who passed down values that were important, of like body confidence, body love, self-love, positivity. So I think when it comes to sexuality issues, a lot of times parents don't take the time to figure out what they believe and why they believe that.
Mm-hmm.
So then when things are inundating them, they're like, oh, there's like trans bathrooms and like gay marriage. And like, I don't know, my kid's telling me that they're pansexual. Like, I don't know what that means. I don't know what to do with it. Instead of taking that time to figure out like, okay, what do I believe about these things? Let me do my own research. To critically think. They just kind of spew whatever has already been planted in them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that's based in ignorance. And so then what happens is they end up isolating and alienating their kids because they're giving these answers that aren't supportive. And it's really based out of ignorance. But because the parent's scared, they don't know what to do. And so then instead of saying anything, sometimes they won't say anything. Like, they'll just be completely shut off and silent, which is an incredibly powerful message, not saying anything, yeah. acknowledging anything. Or they come from a place of like hate or like criticism, which makes kids feel really unsafe. And they don't want to open up and talk to their parents.
Yeah, because they don't want to be judged, or they don't want, if they are telling a story about a friend and then you start judging
Yep.
That person, they don't want also their friend or the event to be judged. So they're like, they shut up completely.
Yep.
They're like, and I think sometimes it's important to let them know that, you know, you are not sure about how you feel about that subject. Sometimes, you know, like now with my son, he's like 12. And when we talk about an issue or discuss something that happened, I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this. Like, let me check with myself first,
yeah.
I say.
Yeah.
And then I say, do you remember this issue that we talk about?
So it's beautiful.
Now that I have thought about it, I feel like this. So what do you think? So I think honesty is the best policy, is working 100%. Very nicely in that situation.
Yeah.
So sometimes, and then it's a good message to let them know that we don't know everything. And we are not like we cannot decide on everybody's feelings and everything. So we also have like ups and downs. We can also change our mind. We can learn things.
Absolutely.
And in this changing world, we are also growing up with them, you know?
Absolutely. I think that is one of the most humble and powerful things that we can do for our kids, is to show that, you know, we are human too, and that we are still learning, and that they are worth learning for.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. Well, I also, you know, like three questions for you.
Yes,
and
please.
I love my questions, and I know my guests too. So what was the one turning point in your 30s, or maybe you had several ones, that made you change something in your life or in you, your habits, something?
I would say there are two. So the first one was my dad passed away in my early 30s. Mm-hmm. And that was that changed the work that I did. He had a very traumatic childhood and a very traumatic life. And he thought he could outsmart his demons, and he couldn't. And so I think that really shaped the work that I do and the focus on trauma that I do in my work. So that would probably be the first. The second would be looking at monogamy and the messages around, you know, traditional relationship styles. I definitely came to the, you know, conclusion for myself that, you know, there are more ways that a relationship can be happy and fulfilling than traditional monogamy. And so I think that was probably the other big thing in my 30s.
Yeah, those are very important things.
Yeah.
And when we talk about trauma, I think trauma is also like when you have a dad in your family or like something major happens, it also affect your relationship and your sexual life too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Like as a partner, how can we work on that when like something like tragic happened, or like our partner is dealing with maybe like a loss or a big sadness? How can we like let them know that we are there, but we are also respecting their situation?
Yeah, I think one of the most powerful questions you can ask somebody really in any tough situation, or just situation in general, is how can I support you through this?
Mm-hmm.
And so you are giving them permission to tell you what they need. Okay. And not like a one and done, like, hey, let me know if you need anything. Okay, I'm going to be here, you know, like to check in, you know, every day, or to check in every, you know, depending on the relationship. But obviously if it's, you know, a romantic or a significant relationship, checking in every, you know, couple of days of like, hey, what do you need today? What can I do to make you feel safe, to make you feel loved, to make you feel seen? Because I think that those are the three really, you know, crucial components of humanity that a lot of times people will desire, but also especially when we're grieving, you know, it just, everything feels so overwhelming. And a lot of people are afraid to see that grief, because mm-hmm. it makes them uncomfortable, because they want to fix and they don't want to see you in pain. So they're like, let's solve this now, instead of saying, I will sit with you. Mm-hmm. And that's something I tell my clients who, gosh, like have been through some really traumatic, horrific things. I say, your grief does not scare me. Like your mm-hmm. pain, your pain is not too much for me. I have seen and heard it all. And I've had people in just in like the initial, not even like a we're not even working together. This is just an initial intake, you know, trying out session. I've had people cry just by hearing that, because they have felt like they have been, their grief, their pain, that who they are because of those things, it's just, it's too much for people. And so they don't ever feel like they can have a place to land.
Yeah, I think it's, I think the fear of being judged too. Sometimes, you know, we as a person, we are like judging ourselves so much and so harshly that we think that other people are judging or will think the same for us. So we just want to even talk, like share our own trauma or sadness with ourselves, let alone like sharing it with somebody else.
Yeah.
But like you said, like having a safe person like you, and like talking with a safe person like you, I think will help release that tension and that stress.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, those are very important issues. So my second question is about one thing that you swore by in your 30s that you don't believe in anymore. It can be anything. Habit.
Yeah, that's just a lot of things that come to mind. But like, I think one of the things was I was so like diligent when it came to like health protocol stuff. I was like, okay, I can't drink coffee before I have like lemon water. And then I have to have an apple cider vinegar. And like, I was so obsessive with like, I have to do all of these things. And like, I was so, I wanted to tame my body. And I think that once I, in my, it wasn't until my 40s that I was like, screw that. Like, I'm just, I'm tired of taming this body. I'm tired of trying to, like, and there's nothing wrong with like the lemon water in the morning before coffee or eating, you know, like, but I wasn't listening to my body. I felt like I could cognitively override and tell my body that this is how you fall in line. This is how you stay small. This is how you, you know, shrink yourself. And I just don't care anymore.
And also, should you stay small? Like, there's always this thing, you know, like, so yeah. I think for me too, like in my situation too, like I was always trying to create those rules and follow them. And if I, God forbid, like if I didn't drink that warm water in the morning, it's like, you know, as if like I am dead. I'm no more healthy. I am finished.
Yep.
It's such a big stress and such a big burden to put ourselves on, like as if like we don't have any other thing to worry about.
Exactly.
Oh man, to think about that warm water. And now that I look back, it looks funny, but in when I was in that situation, it was like a big trauma for me.
Yes, it's so true.
So like if a, like a woman in her 30s or like in at any age is listening, it's okay. It's going to pass. Then that stage is going to pass. But it's we want you to pass that stage quicker than maybe, at least for myself, I did. So, and also the my last question is, if your 30-year-old self would be sitting right across you right now, what would you tell that Courtney to do, not to do, or to be careful with?
I would say, like, fight for yourself. Like, fight to be seen and stop shrinking yourself for others.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a very powerful thing. Yeah. We always, like slimes, like those magnetic sands, we try to get into all these shapes, but some, but we mostly forgot who we are, what we want to do in life, and how we want to do it, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
And I think once we find out those things about ourselves, it can also nurture our relationship with our partner, with our family, with our children, and everything.
Yeah.
Because it's, otherwise we are just like changing from one shape to another.
Absolutely. Yeah. We do the world a disservice when we disconnect from who we really are.
Yes. Yes. So, well, it was It was great. Like
I
really enjoy it. And
me too.
I will take your promise for this extra recording.
Would love to. Yeah.
Because like, I think this is a very important topic. And sometimes as parents, we want to do best for our kids while unintentionally we create some not so good environments, or we create some not very helpful comments and everything. So I think the more we know about how to connect with ourselves and also help out with our children, the better for us.
Absolutely.
But like, so tell me this, how can we, like if a person who is listening would like to have your services, how they can reach out to you, and what are the steps?
Sure. Honestly, just sending me a message on any of the social media. So, you know, on my Instagram at Courtney Boyer Coaching, they can email me at CourtneyBoyerCoaching@gmail.com. Like really just, I'm super responsive in getting back to people. I love hearing from people who have listened to me on podcasts and just being like, hey, I really appreciated this, or I had a question about that. I'm happy to interact. So.
Perfect. And then you have an introductory appointment, I'm assuming, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I do. Yeah. And depending on what they're looking for, we can, once they message me and we get talking, we can figure it out and figure out the best approach. And I'm very much, I do what's best for the client. So it's like, hey, if I think that just a one-off session is going to be in your best interest, or if I'm like, honestly, like we need like 90 days together to really get some traction. I for me, that's really important to ethically do what's best for the client.
I see. And what about your book? Who should like read your book?
So I mean, it was written for women in like their 30s to 50s. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I have had a lot of men read the book, or couples read the book together. Mm-hmm. And they have, like, there's been so many great conversations that have come up from couples reading it together. I've had men who have been like, I didn't know that women struggled like this. Like, I have so much more compassion and insight into my female partner's relationship with her body, understanding why she's not interested in sex sometimes. Like, so yeah, I've had people in their 20s read it, but really 30s through 50s females, I think, have been like, is the target audience.
Yes. And also about this topic, you know, I think the sexual desire for men and women, it's a different, has different wiring, right? Like for women is...
Yeah. I mean, yes and no. I think there's like spontaneous arousal versus responsive arousal. Men tend to be more of the spontaneous, which is like, oh, I see somebody like a beautiful woman walking down the street and bam, I'm turned on. Mm-hmm. Whereas women tend to be more responsive, mm-hmm. whereas they need like that initiation of like mm-hmm. sexual stimuli being introduced into this context. Mm-hmm. But there are, you know, there are some women who are spontaneous, who just see somebody attractive walking down the street and bam, they're turned on. Mm-hmm. And there are some men who need more warming up and they're more responsive. So I think there is evidence of that. But also, you know, and I talk about this in the book, like we live in a culture where male sexuality is accepted and encouraged, and mm-hmm. female sexuality is shamed and repressed. And so I think that if, you know, little girls grew up the same as boys, that the sexual landscape would look a lot different, knowing that they had the same permissions that men do.
Yeah, that's a very, like, for example, even like for a man who changes, like maybe girlfriends all the time, we mm-hmm. call them Casanovas, like, and everything. And the girl is like, I don't want to name her.
Yes. Yes.
So like, it's like for men, it's completely okay. And for women, they have to either not do it or be very secretive about it. Like, you
exactly.
know, like not talk about it. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Even conversation I see sometimes on like Instagram, or like the whole body count, you know, phenomena mm-hmm. of like, oh. you know, like, oh, men, you know, can have hundreds, and like women, it's like, oh, well, I don't want to date somebody who has more than 10 or 20 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, it's so interesting to me. Yeah.
Yeah, but maybe little by little, you know, by educating the parent first and then them educating their kids, I think we are going to have a more adjusted environment for our children.
I sure hope so.
Well, Courtney, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
It was a great episode, and it's one of the best episodes, I think, because I think to be a healthy person, a healthy member of the society, we need to be in tune with ourselves so that we can be in tune with our relationship, with our sexuality and everything.
Yeah, totally agree.
You can also learn more about Mastering Your 30s Club and group programs and all the information about my guest at www.healthandco.com/masteringyour30s. Can you or somebody you know be a great guest for this podcast? Please fill out our guest form at www.masteringyour30s.com. Listen to the new episodes of Mastering Your 30s wherever you listen to your podcast. Thank you for listening. Until next time, be good to yourself.